And a very pleasant good evening. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer, of course, is Bill Poposky. Bill Newell, putting together another spectacular show for tomorrow. That's going to be around 8 o'clock. It'll be dropped. And that is, of course, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast. They're going to have a very special guest on as well. So it should be great to be tuning into that. A lot of information. And don't forget, on Thursdays, we have the North Shore Sports Desk program with Nick and Nick. And then it's also Nick and Nick hosting the Merrimack Valley Sports Show as well. Sports Desk, it's called. So the Sports Desks program will be dropping on Thursday, probably around 8 o'clock in the morning, or possibly even earlier, again with Dominic DeCastro and Nick Kukuru. So here we are. We're now into March. We're about 15 days away from the spring equinox, and baseball is going on down south. We got playoffs, basketball, hockey, all kinds of good stuff. And what are you looking at, Tim? What's grabbing your attention right now, sports-wise?
Well, my brother and I are in our usual UConn women's mode, and we follow them pretty much all throughout their season. And now the tournament is here, and they're playing for the Big East championship once again. In fact, it's just starting against Villanova, and so we'll both be keeping our eye and communicating while watching that one.
How'd you get to become a fan of UConn?
You watch them play, and they play the way the game is supposed to be played. You know, they play with discipline, that they play with enthusiasm. Over the years, Gino has been able to put together, just dynamic teams, because kids want to go there and play because of the quality of the program, the quality of the coaching, the quality of the opponents, and he's just produced winners after winners, mm-hmm. And he's I think the winningest coach in women's history. He has set records in terms of tournament wins, conference wins. So it's and they just play the game with a spirit, and they run, they shoot, they play defense. It's everything you want to see in a basketball game, and they win.
Well, yeah, they sure do.
Because of that they win. That's why they're so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it has his bread through the best kids in the country every year to go there. So he's really had, amongst a few schools around the country, the pick of the litter.
Okay, and that makes sense, I guess. They sure have the record. I'm familiar with that. And I just want to remind people that we will be talking to the Newburyport High School hockey coach, Paul Yameen, coming up here in just a few minutes. Tim, I want to change the subject here for 1 second and ask you about Major League Baseball. Have you watched any of the exhibition games with this new timer?
No, they're on a kind of crazy time, so a lot of times I'm not around to watch it. You wouldn't need a timer if the umpires just simply follow the rules that are in the book.
Mm-hmm.
There's a strike zone defined in the rule book. Call it. Tell the hitter, get back into the batter's box. No? You motion to the pitcher, throw. And he can throw it. And if the guy, and it's at the book, guy's not ready, throw it over the middle of the plate, it's a strike.
Mm.
The guy has a shocked look on his face, but you get back into the batter's box.
Well, I haven't seen any of it yet, and I've been reading about it, and most of the reviews, at least in the Boston Globe, are favoring it, but I haven't seen it. And you know what?
You know why, Rick? It's because the umpires don't make the calls. They don't follow the rule book. okay? These guys, like, you know, Nomar really exaggerated.
I was just going to say that. He was the one that just turned it off for me.
You know, every pitch, step out, tap the feet, undo the batting gloves, okay, redo the batting gloves, get back in. Everything was just slow the game down. And, you know, there were a lot of fans in Boston that got sick of that really quick. And that's all you need to do is go get into the batting box.
Hey, listen.
Tell the pitcher, throw.
As a coach, it would seem to me, especially a batter, but also the pitcher, you get out of rhythm if you do, you know, what Nomar did, and they all do it now. But watching it seems to me, man, when you're up there, you want to get into a rhythm, and you stay in the batter's box. I don't know why or where that came about, but as a batter, how does that work? If you take time off after every pitch, does that help you concentrate?
I wouldn't think so. It never did for me. You want to get that position. You want to stay in a comfort zone, you know, and it's the whole nine yards of getting the pitcher out of his comfort zone. Don't let him get into a rhythm.
Yeah, but some of those pitchers, they walk off the mound after every pitch. They walk in a circle. They take their caps off and read a book. I mean, it's crazy. Jeez.
You know, there's a solution to that. If he's not back on the mound making a pitch, ball.
Mm-hmm.
You can end up blocking a guy. You're going to go walk around and talk about the last call? Here's ball four. Now you got to run around base. Now you've just walked in a runner. Oh, good move. Good move. Get on the mound and throw. Get in the batter's box and swing. You can take care of it. You don't need to make these. You don't have to set a timer. Oh, my God. First time I read that last week about the Red Sox won a game because the timer went off.
Yeah.
Pitcher didn't throw. I'm thinking, oh, can you see that during the regular season in a playoff game?
Mm.
Oh, my God. People go right out of their mind. People with money on a game.
Well, we'll see. And, you know, that's another topic. I'm so turned off by sports betting, and I always have been. And now watching a game or listening to the radio, I'm astounded at how much airtime and airspace is taken over odds and this and that and the over-unders and this, is this guy going to spit before this guy spits? It's like, I just want to watch the game. I don't know.
I have no use for it. You know, I don't even play the football pools anymore for the Super Bowl or anything like that. You know, because number one, I tell people, I'm just going to wait and see who wins the pool, and then I'll give them my money. Because it's just easier. I don't have to worry about watching the game. And so I haven't played a football pool probably 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, me too. And I just don't like sports betting, and I never have. And it's just it's controlling.
I never bet a lot either. I never bet a lot. So I can't even find the words to complain about.
All right, let's get to bigger and better things. We're going to bring in Paul Yamin here in just a second, the Newburyport High School hockey team, and they have picked up their second win of the tournament. They are currently seated, and they will be because that's the way the seedings are, at number, where are they? Oh, I'm in the wrong category here. They're in Division
3 or 4.
They're in Division 2.
Two? Wow.
Yeah, and, well, I just had it. Now, wait a minute. Where'd they go? Well, this is weird. Maybe it's not. What the bozo? I'm so confused. I've had all this. This is about my sixth interview today, I guess.
They're playing Kansas.
Yeah, so give me the division. Let me find the division. This is embarrassing. What is it?
They're on the inside.
Yeah, they're in D2. Okay, I just couldn't find them. That's all. Now, where are they? All right, so in D2, at the top. Guess who? Tewksbury and Newburyport is number 6. So they've done very well. They've won the last 2 games, of course, in the tournament. They're now 11-9-3. And coming up, they will be playing. Where'd that go? I can't even find my notes here. Well, we'll bring in Coach Amin, and he can bring us all up to date here. There, I know they're in the there we are, Plymouth South. They've got Canton next as they beat Plymouth South 3-2 in overtime. So Canton will be next.
Right. Odd to see.
What's that?
Bobblehead.
Yeah.
Was ranked 16th.
Yeah, and they were eliminated early on.
Yeah, Noah took them out 5-2.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, Coach. I found it, and I'm going to leave it right there. Not going to change anything till we bring in Paul Yameen. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns, and we will be back. All right, I'm trying to figure out where that noise is coming from. I don't hear it through the headset, so we will take our break now that things are working. Sorry about that. We'll be right back.
Did you grow up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home? Were you abused or suffered childhood trauma at the hands of a parent or caregiver? Have you tried self-help or counseling without success? ACA can help. ACA is a 12-step recovery program for adults whose lives are affected as a result of being raised in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. To find out how others like you have found healing from traumatic childhoods, go to adultchildren.org. That's adultchildren.org.
Okay, after figuring out how to push all these buttons here, we're back. Newburyport High School hockey coach Paul Yameen has joined us once again. So welcome back, Paul.
Hey, Rick, thank you for having me.
Unbelievable, the games you guys have played. You got to tell me about this last one in OT against Plymouth South.
Yeah, it was a good one. They were a good team. Just a good back-and-forth game, two good teams going at it, and we were fortunate enough to come out on the good end there.
Do we have... there he is.
Coach, I think it's easier the deeper you get... you know, the tournament, now you have to play a South Shore team, Canton, from an area that's really has a strong hockey tradition.
Yeah, I mean, we're very familiar with Canton. We've played them twice in the Boston Garden State Championship back-to-back years, split that series, and have continued to play them ever since. Coach Schumann is as good as they come. His staff is fabulous, and it's always a challenge playing them.
Who are some of the kids who brought it home for you the other night against Plymouth South?
I think our seniors really stepped up, played well. You know, we have 7-8 of them that play a lot of minutes for us. And, you know, our Braden Curran scored the winning goal, and he's been playing really well, and we're happy for him that he got that goal. He deserves that. Max Puglio and Jamie Brooks and Ryan Philbin and Cam Caponagro and Charlie Forrest. Zach McHugh, I hope I'm not missing anybody. It's just they're a great bunch of guys, mm-hmm. and we're very happy we could extend the season.
Coach, what's your message in a tournament setting heading into OT? What's the message you convey to the kids?
Well, we've been here before. You know, we're a battle-tested team. You know, we shouldn't be on our heels. We should be the aggressor. And, you know, I think we were for most of that game. I'm not sure if you guys saw it or heard about it, but it would have been a tough one to swallow if we lost that one. You know, we deserve to win that game, and they're a good team. I give those guys all the credit in the world. Those kids are great in line. They had a lot of good seniors, and, you know, it's tough to see that. You know, I didn't know much about that team. I saw them play a couple times, but, you know, they had 9 seniors in the team or 10 seniors in the team, and you know, they were hurt, and they battled. So it could have been us on that end of it, but I think we deserved the win.
Well, if I'm right, you had a lot of stuff to overcome at the beginning of the year, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, every year there's intangibles that are going to come up, and we had a lot of guys sick, but I think a lot of teams did too. You know, I don't know to the extent that we had, but you know, we fought through it, and I think we're getting better as you know, at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, I'm looking at the pairings of the MIAA. And it's like, with the exception of like 2 or 3 teams, everybody had a bye the first game. Like with the play-in game for a couple of teams,
yeah.
You know, to get enough numbers, you know, everybody else gets a bye. And I'm thinking, that just looks so convoluted.
Yeah, you know, I honestly believe that there are too many teams in the tournament. You know, I don't know. You know, there's some teams in the tournament with 5 or 6 wins, and I'm not so sure that's the right thing to do.
Well, you know, as long as you are 500, you know, in your division, or because God knows conferences don't matter much anymore.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
The old Sullivan rules.
Yeah, I mean, like we said to the team last week, we earned our way in. You know, we needed 21 points, and we got 21 points. So, you know, we didn't backdoor into the tournament. We earned our way, and I think that's how it should be.
Well, you know, the D2 is packed with good teams, especially near the top, and it's great to see you guys up there at number 6, rightfully so. And now with 2 more wins, how do you look at D2 the rest of the way, Paul? Because, I mean, Tewksbury is a North Shore team, in effect. They don't, you know, don't play in the Cal or the NEC. But Tewksbury is at the top. And then you guys are number 6. And I believe there's one more team still in it from the North Shore. Can't tell.
I'm trying to think.
No, Gloucester and Gloucester's out. And Masco's out.
Yeah, I think it's us in the South Shore. It's Norwood and
yeah. Well, I know what I was thinking. I was thinking of the Cal teams probably in D3 and D4.
Yeah, so. Yeah. There's actually four Cal teams still alive in the tournament between 2, 3, and 4 divisions.
That's what I was saying. Yep.
That's good for our league.
You bet.
No, I had a question, and then you guys started talking again, and out it went.
All right. Well, if you get it back, interrupt.
Back.
I'm sure it will. All right, Coach, so what is the message now? Because you do have, I mean, you know, you're in the quarterfinals, and Plymouth South, I don't know anything about them. Excuse me, not Plymouth South, rather, but Canton. And Canton is up, they're number 3, so they're just above you guys. And it's been a great run to this point. But what's the message this week, and how do you approach this game?
Well, the message today was, you know, we can't revel in the win yesterday. You know, that's done with, and I'm happy for you. We're happy for you guys, and you know, we have to get back to focus and practice. And you know, our practice has to be good because we have 2 days to practice. We're playing on Wednesday. It's a quick turnaround. So, you know, I think the focus was there, which is sometimes difficult with you know, high school guys, but. We're happy with the practice today, and I think hopefully we get the same thing tomorrow. And you know, we're looking forward to taking that long 2-hour bus ride down to Point.
Okay, good. Did it come back, Tim?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Okay.
Well, I think you were talking about the parity in Division II. I think, Tim.
Yeah. I was looking up to Tewksbury's next game, and they've got Norwood, and boy. You know, you mentioned the town of Norwood in the same sentence with hockey, and you come up with Robbie Futurik.
Yeah.
And those teams back in the 70s that were just so dominant, and you couldn't watch them a whole lot, but you followed them in the newspaper.
Yeah. Well, we our first time we played Norwood for the first time ever last year, and you know, we lost that double overtime game in the round of 16, and they actually just beat Tewksbury yesterday. Norwood.
Oh. So,
yeah, Tewksbury is, I think it was 5-2 final. So Tewksbury is out.
You're right. You're right. I've been reading it wrong. You are correct. Thank coach. Thanks for fixing that for me. Yeah, they lost 5-2. And, wow, number one seed down. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at a lot of the teams that are left. There's a lot of, you know, tradition and proud programs there.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're very happy to be a part of it and looking forward to getting back after it with Ken.
I see Duxbury's rolling right along, too.
Yeah, Duxbury, Walpole.
Jeez.
They're doing well.
My final question, Coach, and then I'll let Tim ask or mention what he wants to, but it's at this time of year, I don't even know how to phrase it. How's the discipline on the team?
Well, I mean, I think that as far as when you say discipline,
I'm talking about penalties. I don't want to make it too broad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, again, I don't know what it is with us and penalties. We play physical, and
mm-hmm.
that's a part of our game. And you know, the other day we had five, and Plymouth South had one. So again, you know, I think that in order for us to be successful, we have to play that style.
Mm-hmm.
And we practiced the kill a lot, and we did very well with the kill the other day. And so we're going to continue to play physical, and if we're on the kill, then so be it. We're on the kill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you home for the next game for Canton? Coach? Are you in Canton?
Oh, well, yeah, and the game has moved down into Bourne, in the Gallo Arena.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Go a little bit through. Just cross the bridge.
Yeah, I guess there are two rinks in Canton that we've played in both of them, and the MIAA requires, I think, a 1,000 seating capacity, and neither of those rinks in Canton have them. So the closest to them was Bourne, and that's the furthest for us. So
in an age where transportation costs are over the top, and everybody talks about limiting expenses, how is it that the MIAA did not get the memo on playing games in between the two teams, not away from both teams, but in between the two teams?
Yeah. I think, well, you know, rightfully so, Canton should have a home game. I mean, the highest or the lowest seed has the home game
mm-hmm.
until the Final Four. So they were told by the MIA they had to move it because their facilities are too small for this venue. So I'm not quite sure what the MIA thinks Newburyport is going to bring for fans down to Canton,
mm-hmm.
I mean, down to Bourne. You know, that's a two-hour ride in the middle of the day.
I was just going to ask you that. I was going to ask you that very thing about, you know, leaving school early and all that, because, I mean, you're going to have to leave, I would imagine, at a decent hour just to get down there.
Well, yeah, we're going to have to leave at 2:15. You know, we're going through Boston in the middle of the afternoon, so it's a two-hour ride. And, you know, it is what it is. We went through the same thing last year. We had to go to Norwood in the middle of the day. We had a two-hour bus ride. We jumped off the bus and played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we've been there before, and no excuses. We're ready to go.
Well, Coach, go ahead, Tim.
When Gloucester was Gloucester football was it was before the great run 07-10. I think it was around 02, and they had to play Whitman Hanson, and they had to go to Whitman, and they got caught in the evening traffic. They got to the game 15 minutes before start time, and officials wouldn't give them any extra time to get ready. They walked up the field cold.
Yep.
And they dropped that game. And there were a lot of unhappy people in Gloucester that the officials wouldn't give them the consideration.
No, you know,
you put a team under, and you've got them traveling, like you say, you're going through Boston, you never know what you're going to get.
Right.
You know, you might have the tunnels.
I mean, I said, last year when we were going to Norwood, I said the same thing. We're starting a game at 4:15 in the middle of the day. We're traveling, you know, a 2-hour and 45-minute bus ride. We get stuck in traffic. We walk in the place, and the AD tells me we're going to start early. You know, we got a basketball game tonight. I said, we're not starting early. You know, we just got here.
Right.
And we got people coming from Newburyport. So we're gonna get ready. We're going to stretch and get ready, and we'll start at the regular starting time. You know, and it's like they don't even think about the teams, you know, like what they need to go through. We have a routine, you know, we like our routine. And sometimes if you don't get to go through the routine, it can affect you negatively.
Well, that sounds like an AD who does not know what you go through. That's not good at all.
No, Rick, that's an AD who's trying to cut an edge for his team.
And you know what? We should have won the game. So whatever. We should have won. We lost it in double overtime. They scored with 30 seconds left on a power play to beat us. We had to play the refs. We had to play everybody.
Well, Paul, we like talking the positive stuff, and you guys have done so well this year with the schedule you've had and the tournament that you've played so far. Maybe a little luck of the Irish will be on that bus with you going down there to Canton on Wednesday.
I hope so. We as a coaching staff really enjoy the group that we have, and, you know, there's nothing like this time of the year. Nothing like it.
Absolutely.
Very exciting, very happy.
Great talking with you, Paul. We're going to do it again, but in the meantime, good luck and, you know, be well. Do a good job.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you guys. Have a good night. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's Paul Yamin, who is the Newburyport High School hockey coach, and they had a bit of a rough stretch on their schedule, but they finished with a .500 record. And, again, with all those teams you talked about, Tewksbury, Duxbury, Canton, Walpole, Silver Lake, above them, Newburyport's ranked number 6. So that's a pretty good accomplishment, I would say, don't you, Tim?
I agree.
Absolutely. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll bring in the basketball insider, Mr. Mike Grenier. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO New Sports. And I think I finally almost, I'm not going to say, I was just going to say, Tim, I think I've got it together, but I'm not going to say that.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Mike Grenier is with us now. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer is Mr. Bill Proposky. Bill Newell working feverishly back in his studio, getting ready tomorrow's podcast of the North Shore Sports Writers. And that, actually, it's the Salem News Sports Writers. And going to have a lot of conversation there and a surprise guest, so you'll want to check that out Tuesday morning at around 8 a.m. Well, Mike, we're here. Tim's here, and I don't even know where to start.
Well, you know,
okay.
Tim, fire away.
Okay, here we go. How would you rate Geno Smith as a quarterback in the NFL?
Geno Smith?
Yeah.
I'd rate him as a middle of the road Metsa quarterback. You know, he improved last year, but I don't consider him in the top echelon of quarterbacks in the NFL. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
I heard Zolak talking about the price of quarterback coming up.
Yes.
And I found it totally mind-blowing. And I just saw the scroll that said Geno Smith has re-signed with Seattle 3 years, $105 million.
Wow.
Wow. Middle of the road.
Middle of the road.
$30 million.
Right. And of course they were kind of wrong on Russell Wilson too. I mean, you know, it turned out that they don't like him very much in Denver. They probably would love to get rid of him. He's a diva, and there's been all sorts of things written and said about him in the last few weeks. But Sean Payton is a great coach, and he'll probably humble him a little bit.
All right, so Mike.
So you want to start? Let's start. You don't know where to start. Tim, I know we just diverted a little bit. Well, let's start with the Celtics' horrible weekend. That's a great place to start. It's not a great subject to talk about, but it has to be addressed. First of all, Tim and Rick, how do you lose to the Brooklyn Nets after you have a 28-point lead? And we're not talking a Brooklyn Nets vintage team that has, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons, who, of course, never shows up anyway. But we're talking about a team that's going to be not competitive the rest of the year or barely competitive. 28-point lead, they blow it. And matter of fact, it was like a 38 or 39-point turnaround in favor of the Brooklyn Nets, okay? And then you come to the overtime game against the Knicks, in which the Celtics had a 14-point lead in the third quarter. And they got beat by a backup point guard, Emmanuel Quickly, because Jalen Brunson was not available. Emmanuel Quickly, nice little player, 13 points a game. However, he scores 38 against the Celtics. 38 points along with like 8 assists and 7 rebounds. And nice player, but I'm thinking, did the Celtics do the proper homework on this guy? Did they scout him correctly? Because he was driving the lane with no interference. He was making layups. He was taking short jumpers. He had the game of his life. And I'm thinking, okay, that's great for the kid. He's a young guy who's very enthusiastic. However, why couldn't the Celtics contain him, at least in key stretches of the game? You know, I can't get over the last two games how poorly the Celtics have, you know, they've just let the lead slip away big time, and then they lost to a couple of teams here that, although the Knicks are on fire right now, we'll talk about them in a minute, Rick, when we do the Power Five, but losing to Nets was inexcusable, and then losing an overtime game to the Knicks was difficult because they're playing back-to-back games. They were in Cleveland tonight, and Jason Tatum had to play basically 50 minutes yesterday against the Knicks. So it's just, and of course they've fallen further behind the Milwaukee Bucks, the Celtics have. So to start with that, Rick and Tim, I want to bounce that off you and what you think of those general thoughts.
Okay, you know, as they blew that game to Brooklyn, my first thought was, they played that first quarter at such a pace.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, that's how Brooklyn did it. They let themselves run themselves out of gas. And then in the second half, they picked up the defensive intensity that the Celtics couldn't match because they were so friggin' tired from literally running up a big score that their legs just went out from underneath them. And they couldn't finish. So everything came up short. Everything that was missed. They didn't rebound as effectively. So I'm thinking, well, that's a way to beat the Celtics. Let them run themselves out of gas.
Yeah. And I think also, too, Tim, it was a classic case of, you know, during an 82-game season, the good teams will overlook the bad teams and not take the game seriously and think they can put in a half-hearted effort and still win the game. And I thought that was the case against the Brooklyn Nets. I just think the effort wasn't there after they had that built up that big. They thought the Nets would just cave in. And
right.
The Nets, you got to give them, they played with a bit of pride, came back and stormed away with a victory. And then the Knicks game was extremely disappointed. I mean, the Knicks are red hot. They've been great lately. But the Celtics did have the 14-point lead, and I thought that Jason Tatum settled for too many threes. He was 6-for-17. We'll talk about him in a minute more because since the All-Star break, he shot it very poorly overall, okay? But I just think the Knicks game was certainly a winnable game, and Joe Mazzulla did not reach deep enough onto the bench. You know, Peyton Pritchard didn't play at all. Hauser didn't play that much. And you know, in a 58-minute game, you have to rely on the bench to give you some quality minutes. And Joe Mazzulla sometimes does not trust his bench, I think.
Well, you know, without Brogdon, that's you would think they'd go to someone else. But I wonder about the team management and clock management and all that stuff, because the ride they were on, you know, riding the crest of the wave, they didn't have to worry too much about that. You could plug guys in and out, but now that they're struggling, you know, it takes more of an, I don't want to say analytical, but sort of a strategic, view on how to put players in and when. And I'm also very, very concerned about Robert Williams.
Oh yeah. I mean, that was going to be another topic we could discuss because, Robert Williams, here we go again. You know, I was looking up some numbers on him, and not only has he played just 28 games this season, and look, by the time he comes back, Rick, the Celtics will be around the 72 or 73 game mark of their 82 game season, and he will have played 28 games, which is well below half. He'll probably finish somewhere around playing 33-34% of the team's game, and we don't know what the next injury will be on the horizon, because every time we feel he's going to play 10 or 15 games in a row, bingo, he pulls the hamstring, groin injury, a knee injury. It's not just been a chronic injury in one particular area, it's been throughout his body. So I'm glad you brought him up, Rick, because I was going to say they come to the playoffs. I'll ask you this question, guys, Tim in particular, or both of you. When it comes to playing the playoffs, and it'll be a tough physical series, the Eastern Conference is loaded. The Knicks are playing great now. You got Philadelphia still playing well. You got the Milwaukee Bucks, obviously have the best record in the NBA. Do you really think that the Celtics can rely on Robert Williams to be ready for 21 or 27 or 28 games of a postseason? I don't think so. I think that's really a stretch to think that he's going to be available to play deep into the playoffs against the very best teams in the NBA.
No, you know, Mike, I see guys like him, and they're constantly tweaking hamstrings, pulling muscles. You know, is he in too good of a shape? Is he overtoned? All I think of when I see guys like him getting constantly injured with the skeletal muscle injuries is Reggie Jackson. He was so pumped up that he was forever pulling hamstrings and be out of the lineup because he was just so muscular. His quads were just so big, and he just popped those things.
Yeah, but modern medicine, I know what you're saying about Reggie Jackson, but modern medicine and the way these guys look, I mean, they make such big money that every NBA team, they have strength and conditioning coaches, and especially conditioning coaches, and it goes 12 months a year. These guys check in, they get workout, and you'd think that Robert Williams would be programmed to sustain a long stretch of basketball. However, that hasn't been the case at all. And also, too, along with that, it's funny, we talk about Williams was a young guy, and yet Al Horford, how does he preserve his body? Right, Tim? The guy, not only has he been playing great basketball, the guy is shooting 45% on three-pointers this season at the age of 36. And he's capable of playing big minutes in an overtime game. And sure, he's not playing tonight on the second night of a back-to-back, but that's been the way that that's the way they were going to use him all year anyway. But Horford, to me, is a guy who has shown durability into his 30s and now close to 37 years old, which he'll turn 37 during the playoffs. And how does he do it and avoid the injuries and still be an effective basketball player? And Robert Williams, being 10, 11 years younger, can't do it. I just don't get it. And I think, to stretch your point out, Rick, about Robert Williams, I think, what do the Celtics do with him come June when the playoffs are over? Do you come back with him next year and hope that he's going to play 70 or 80 games or 65 games? Or if you're Brad Stevens, do you think, you put feelers out there and say, let's see what we can get from this guy. Personally, I've seen him injured, injury prone the last two or three seasons that I say, if I'm Brad Stevens, I'm looking to put out feelers, and if some team offers a good trade, I jump on it.
No, you know, you can see that because you've got to have a guy that's dependable, but certainly with his athletic skill, he's going to be attractive to one of the lower half teams.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
That's going to look for young athleticism, get out and run, and we'll take the flyer on the guy. You know, because he's going to be able to, he's going to give us something more than we're getting. But
right.
the Celtics are at that level where they need the long-term production that Al Horford's given them this year, but they need that in a guy in his mid-20s.
Right, exactly. That's what we're missing. And it's so disappointing because when he is on the floor, he has some exciting moments with his block shots and his rebounding and his alley-oop. I mean, obviously he's extremely athletic when anybody throws him the ball close to the basket and he can, you know, he can put it in. So, you know, he does have a lot of appeal to teams that might be interested in that sort of player. And obviously Brad Stevens will be looking for a guy who can give him some scoring, who can be reliable and give him 60 or 70 or 75 games per year, not one-third of the schedule. That's what's disturbing to me, is that it's been not something that's just plagued him for 1 year. It's plagued him for 3 or 4 years now.
Well, there are guys. Yeah. There are guys.
No,
like,
I was watching ahead. Him tonight play. It was against Brooklyn, and he was just amazing when he went up and got his hands on the ball. Nobody got anywhere near it. Nobody had an opportunity to get the ball away from him. He just absolutely owns the ball once he gets his hands on it.
Right. Right. But here's the thing I fear, guys. And, you know, Rick, we know the Eastern Conference, Tim. Your likely playoff candidates, you know, whether it be the second round or third round, are going to be Joel Embiid, MVP candidate, very physical player, takes it inside a lot. Giannis Antetokounmpo, who takes it inside more than just about any player in the league, very physical player, very tough. Can we really expect Robert Williams to defend those guys with any efficiency? Without getting banged up, I just, you know, obviously sometimes they put Grant Williams on, even though he's vastly undersized, they put Grant Williams because he's more physical than Robert Williams. Or else they'll put Horford on him temporarily, you know, at least a little bit. And, of course, Mike Muscala, who we don't know how much good he'll do in the playoffs, but he's, you know, basically a three-point shooter. We don't know whether he can play the inside defense because he hasn't been asked to do that yet. But I'm really fearing the defensive situation against guys like Embiid and Giannis.
Well, I think, excuse me, I think they could overcome that, in my opinion.
Yep.
If they played team defense like they used to last year. And by team defense, I'm alluding to hockey now. You know, if you have a low goals against average in hockey, that means you've got all five players coming back and playing defense. And in basketball, I think it's sort of the same thing. Last year they did that. They were very aggressive on defense, you know, in the other team's zone. But they also came back and they worked together as a five team unit. And I don't know if that's there. I don't have the eyes to tell if they've been doing that or not, but it seems to me they can overcome, anything with any big guy with the talent the Celtics they have without Robert Williams if they focus on it for the 60 minutes or 48 minutes, whatever it is.
That's a good point, Rick. But you're right. They're going to have to have some help side defense, you know, weak side defense when Embiid gets the ball or when Giannis gets the ball, because those guys are big, strong, and physical. And they get a lot of calls from the officials as well. But I just think Robert Williams, whether it's a case of he gets chronic injuries or he doesn't have the toughness of some of these other guys that we've been talking about, either way, it doesn't make any difference. In the offseason, you know, if you're Brad Stevens, to me, you're considering dealing Robert Williams. In the meantime, you want to get some production out of him in the playoffs. So he's got to, quote, get healthy again. But how many times have we heard that story? He's got to get healthy again, and then the Celtics will be better. Well, we don't know that because we don't know if that he's ever healthy, and it's a real problem. So Rick, I'm glad you brought him up.
The postseason is you tend to shorten your bench.
Oh, yes, no doubt.
You know, you're not going 12 deep. You're going basically 7, 8 guys, and the rest, well, we'll get you in if the circumstances call for it.
Yep.
You know, and so in that fashion, you're not going to be overly worried about what you're going to get from Williams. He's just going to go to the back of the bench, you know, and, you know, you're going to be able to spot him and get him to eat up some fouls for you. But you're not going to be so reliant on him, you know, that it's going to be upsetting to the game plan.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with you. And Rick, we Well, and Tim, we sometimes overlook Marcus Smart because he's there for you every day. And you know, Marcus Smart took such a physical pounding against the Knicks. I don't know how he finished that game because he took some hits that were football-like hits. And he's down on the floor for a minute or two, and he comes back. And I'm thinking, when I was watching that Knicks game, I was thinking, if Robert Williams had half the toughness of Marcus Smart, Robert Williams would end up playing 65 or 70 games a year. I mean, do you agree with that?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you know, I think he just gets those twitchy muscles that are just prone to, you know, go boing.
Yeah.
You watch him run down the court, and you watch him go for the ball, and it's an all-out physical exertion. So maybe it's
true.
Not
yeah.
a wonder, because he's not smooth going to the hoop. It's just all-out power moves every single time.
Right. That's true. But like we said before, if it's going to happen every six or seven games, that he's suddenly out for 7 to 10 days, what good is that in the long run?
Exactly,
because,
yeah.
You know, what good is that in the long run? So we've talked about Marcus Smart, and we talk about Horford and how he's able to preserve his body to be playing all these games. And I mean, last night he could have won that Knicks game with a three-pointer, you know, but he had already hit like 6 of 9. So you can't blame him for that loss, that's for sure. You know, they just had a letdown again, and they let a 14-point lead slip away in the second half, you know, after blowing a 28-point lead against the Nets a couple nights before.
We've seen that with every team up at the top.
True.
And,
true.
You know, maybe this is their turn for a downslide, but there are warning signs, I think, is what we're seeing.
Correct. Exactly. I believe the Celtics are playing 7 of their next 8 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So that's even more of a, you know, a dangerous situation for them as far as falling further behind in the Milwaukee Bucks in the standings. And, you know, obviously that means they'll finish with 6 of their final 9 at home, which is nice because if they're still within a game or two of the Milwaukee Bucks, there's a chance they could overtake them or whatever. But, you know, ideally you want to see them finish first to have home court advantage throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. So maybe even the entire league if the Denver Nuggets can lose a couple of games, you know. So mm-hmm. we'll see what happens. But, the other thing, guys, that I'd like to talk about is Jason Tatum. And obviously, Tatum is having a phenomenal year. And last night, he gave it his all. He played 49 minutes out of 58. And so he's out tonight versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Of course, he got tackled. So it was a true injury. He got contusions, I believe he's without. He got basically tackled when he was coming up the court. And you could tell he was in pain. But in his last 7 games... meaning since the All-Star, and I call it the All-Star nonsense, Rick, because as we know, there's no true competition there.
Yep.
And Tatum got 55 in that game, and it's all that individual glory and all that stuff. But since the real games have restarted, he is 17 for 59 on three-pointers. They're shooting 28%, okay? And that's, to me, that's not just 2 or 3 game slump. That's 7 games. It's a little something to be worried about. And what concerns me is, like, I've mentioned his heavy minutes and all that. And of course, when you're playing heavy minutes and you don't want to get pounded inside, you're going to settle for the three. And I thought last night was a good example of that. 6 for 17 on threes. And, you know, he took it inside, on certain occasions when he felt he could get a layup or get a foul. But you can only do that so many times when you're a player of his caliber. You're not going to go to the foul line as much as Giannis or Embiid, but you're going to get a certain number of free throws. But his body is not as big or as strong as Embiid or Giannis, so he's going to take a pounding. And I just think that somehow, this, even though it's a premium on winning games, you got to find ways to give Jason Tatum little spots during the game, 2 or 3 minutes off, 2 or 3 minutes here and there, just to preserve him and get him ready to be a full 100% for the playoffs, because the guy is playing his tail off, as we know. And he's probably slipped a little bit in the MVP rankings behind, you know, these guys that we've talked about, Jokic. But who cares? The idea is to win the game and to win the championship. So we don't care if he's third or fourth in the MVP rankings
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a little concerned because his shooting has been off. you know, his shooting, particularly his three-point shooting, has been off in the last seven games since the All-Star break, really.
Yep.
So, you know, you got to hope that he gets a second win. He's just turned 25. He's a little older, right? But I'm just concerned a little bit because there's a seven-game stretch here where he is not shooting it well from the outside.
You know, my brother and I watched, I was telling Rick earlier, watching UConn, the UConn women.
Yeah.
Because it's such a joy. My wife says to me, why do you always watch? All they do is win. I go, that's why I watch them. But it's more of how they win than just the winning.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they do it the way the game, how we learn the game. You play defense. You run on offense. You run when you can. You can play half court. You know, you play defense. You do all the little things, and you win. And that's what they've managed to do over these past 20 years, basically better than anybody else.
Right.
And I said to my brother the other night, because the when they were playing, I think it was the first game of the tournament, they had a lead. It kind of shortened up, and then they lengthened it out. I sent a message that said, basically, UConn girls have to show the Celtics how to hold on to a lead.
Oh, yeah.
They were it just came to the half. They're up by 10. The lead had gone down to 2, and in the last 2 minutes, it went back to 10.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to go too much of a tangent about women, but, Tim, I actually watched Caitlin Clark of Iowa over the weekend, and what a phenomenal player she is.
Yeah.
Absolutely dazzling, totally team-oriented. Great player, but I don't want to stray too much from the Celtics here because we're talking about Jason Tatum's problems and Robin Williams' problems. And where does Joe Mazzulla fit in this? Because he's got to do some really strong coaching here down the stretch if they do want to finish first. Luke Kornet is playing tonight. That's good. You know, Peyton Pritchard is playing tonight. That's good. He's got to use his bench. Grant Williams, after sitting out, well, basically not playing many minutes for a couple games, he's out there and playing a lot of minutes the last couple nights. That's good. I think he's going to make use of all these guys before the playoffs start. And then, you know, like you said, Tim, they're going to shorten the bench. But that's when you want, you know, Derek White to have some big games and you want, you know, Hauser at least to contribute something in the playoffs. But they can't do that unless they play late in the regular season here. So, you know, unfortunately, it's not much of a slide the Celtics have had, all right? They've lost 3 of the last 4, 2 straight. But the Milwaukee Bucks, this is the unfortunate for the Celtics, the Milwaukee Bucks have won 17 of 18. So
yeah.
It's amazing. Their consistency has been amazing. And they played the back-to-back nights, Saturday and Sunday, and they finally lost to Philadelphia in the national televised game. But they bounced right back and won by 6 points last night. So you can't expect them to have any kind of slump. The Celtics are going to have to keep winning if they want first place. I personally think first place is very important this season. The Celtics played great at the Garden, and they've been terrific on the road, but I would like to have a seventh game if it's Milwaukee. I want that seventh game to be right at TD North Garden.
Oh, exactly.
It's funny.
Mike, when we talk about them going to like an 8-man team, who are you picking for 6, 7, and 8 off the bench?
6, 7, and 8 off the bench?
Yep.
Well, obviously, Brogdon. I mean, Brogdon's got to be the key guy. I think he's in the running for probably the top candidate for Sixth Man of the Year award, okay? So I think he's going to be the guy that comes strong off the bench. I like Hauser and the way he shot the ball here the last 10, 15 games. I think you can spot him up even in playoff games, and he's going to make the defense stretch because if Jason Tatum's outside, he gets double and triple team, Hauser can make you pay with the threes. And I think Grant Williams has to be part of it too because Grant Williams is a big, strong, physical guy. He's not height-wise, he's below some of these other guys he's going to have to contest. But he can shoot the three, and he gets very physical. And if he can keep his mouth shut in terms of the officials, he could be another weapon for the Celtics. So I think those are the guys that you're talking about. Derek White, of course. I mean, Derek White, he could start or play. He's been, to me, a really flexible player. And the thing we've overlooked about Derek White, and Rick, I know you'd probably love this about him, he's got more blocks from his position than any player in the NBA. I think he's getting like 58 blocks or something like that. He's playing tremendous defense. He seems to have a really nice knack for where a guy is going to release the ball, and he's making a lot of block. He's getting a lot of block shots. He's playing great.
The other thing I like about him, he seems to take a lot of joy in playing basketball.
Yeah,
He exudes that, and he's got a motor that won't quit. We're running low here on time, so you want to do a power five or a surprise five? What are we doing?
No, a power five.
Okay.
Power five. Okay. I don't know if there might be a little, just a minor surprise here, because
I know who's not number one, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Of course, we're going with the New York Knicks. I mean, the Cleveland Cavaliers have been good, but the Knicks, 9 of the last 10, the way they beat the Celtics last night, Jalen Brunson having a great year, Julius Randle is having a phenomenal year. This kid quickly comes off the bench. They played well enough lately, more than the last 10 games. They played very well the last 3 or 4 weeks. So they're number five, okay? Number five. You got to go with Philadelphia. They've been steady, been good. Not at the very top, but they've been good. So number four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with the Boston Celtics at number three spot.
Ooh.
Which is the lowest they've been, I think, since the season started.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been up and down. They've been up and down lately, and that was an incredibly bad loss to the Nets. And then I'm going with the Denver Nuggets at the number two spot. They've been simply more consistent than the Celtics, and that team definitely could go to the finals. So that's why I have them at the number two spot. And, of course, Milwaukee remains at the number one spot. So there you go. What do you guys think of that?
Well, 4 out of 5 in the Eastern Conference. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, that's because, you know, I like Memphis a lot, but Ja Morant's out right now for, like, having a gun somewhere in a club. And, of course, they lost his kid Brandon Clark, who was one of their top players off the bench, a great, terrific bench guy that I wish the Celtics had, because he's got the sort of the makeup that Robert Williams does. He's got a season-ending, but it's a torn ACL, not like a hamstring pull. They lost him with injury, so they've got some injury problems, and Ja Morant is out, so I've moved him out of the top five. And, of course, in the Western Conference, I guess the team that everyone's going to be looking at will be the Phoenix Suns, because now that they have Kevin Durant and have an old Chris Paul, but still a very savvy, sage point guard. And, of course, they have Devin Booker, one of the top guards in the NBA. So there's your big three for that team. And they could be dangerous. Not quite there yet in the top five, but they're creeping up and playing very well.
Mike, I never argue with your five because they're always so spot on.
Well, okay, that's good. But I guess I want to... I hate to dislodge the Celtics, but, you know, let's be honest about it. They just have been a little off lately, and, you know, those two losses over the weekend were upsetting.
They were ugly.
The Knicks game wasn't ugly, Rick, in the sense that the Knicks are playing extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the Nets game is very upsetting. And, you know, it's funny because the Nets did this not only without Durant and Kyrie, who have been gone for a while, but Ben Simmons hasn't been seen since those two guys left. Who knows what world he inhabits, you know?
Hey,
and he's just not a premier player. I don't think he ever was, and I don't think he ever will be.
Mike, for next week, if we can remember this assignment, how about you check in on our locals who are in the NBA?
Absolutely.
Because we haven't talked with them in a while, and I noticed us, I don't know what I was listening to, but they were talking about the Bucks and this, that, and the other thing, and local people involved, and they completely left out Connaughton. And I think it might have been on sports, you know, the sports radio in Boston, but it was like, whoa, what are you doing?
Well, he started like 25 of the last 26 games or something like that.
So why don't you
include him as part of the picture over there.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, we'll be talking about Scoonie Penn and Tom Thibodeau, who coached the Knicks team. And, you know, we could talk about all that stuff next week.
Love it. Okay. All right, Mike, thank you so much. We'll do it again.
Tim, great to talk to you. Keep watching those. But I'll watch Iowa, Tim. Caitlin, she's a terrific player.
She'd be all over the news if she played east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. It's always fun, man. This is great. I love it.
All right. Take care, guys.
You too. All right.
Mike.
That's Mike Grenier, who is a former Salem News sports journalist, still a sports journalist at this point, and our basketball insider by his courtesy. We love it. Ah, my goodness. Tim, we covered a lot of stuff here tonight.
Well, you always manage to.
Yeah, and don't forget, we'll have the latest in the scores in the MIAA tournament, high school hockey here in Massachusetts. Bill Newell will be checking all that stuff out, and I will too. And don't forget also, please, that tomorrow we'll be dropping a podcast at around 8 a.m. or maybe even earlier. Bill Newell will be hosting the Salem News sports writers and the Gloucester Times sports editor, and there'll be a special guest from Beverly High School basketball tomorrow, along with the sports writers. So that's tomorrow, in the morning when you get up. And don't forget North Shore Today, our daily news magazine. Ain't nobody do nothing like it. Bill does a great job with that. So please check out that stuff. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. And Tim, I'll leave you with one word. Chris Sale.
Yeah, two innings and struck out a couple of batters, and he didn't get hurt doing it.
Okay. All right, Coach, thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
All righty, Rick. Good night.
Take care, Tim. That's Tim Kearns, who is our ambassador of goodwill, and, of course, our sports analyst. So on behalf of Tim Kearns and Bill Newell and our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky, I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for joining us. Be well and do the right thing.